Hey folks, today's episode was sponsored by Datadog. It's a cloud-scale monitoring and analytics platform. Datadog was built to bring clarity to complex dynamic applications in the cloud, on-premises, in containers, or wherever they run. With beautiful dashboards, distributed tracing, and seamless integrations with more than 200 technologies, including Azure and Docker and PagerDuty, Datadog provides deep end-to-end visibility into the health and performance of modern apps. Visualize key metrics, set alerts to identify anomalies, and collaborate with your team to troubleshoot and fix issues fast. I'd like you to try it yourself by starting a free 14-day trial today. Listeners of this podcast will also get a free Datadog t-shirt. Get started at bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. That's bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. Hi friends, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Christoph Czeslak, who works on the Safe Stack, S-A-F-E. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. So this, we've heard about the LAMP stack, Linux and Apache, and what is the Safe Stack?
So Safe Stack is similar technology stack, just built from the F-sharp technologies. Mm-hmm. And F-sharp is a .NET functional first programming language. And on our webpage, we have this sales pitch, which says basically Safe is end-to-end functional first stack for cloud-ready web development that focus on type-safe programming. And that's like a lot of buzzwords. And I guess we can go deeper into that in a moment.
Well, if someone is listening to this show, they may be a C-sharp programmer, and they probably just load up Visual Studio, go file new project, and they probably use ASP.NET MVC. So they're familiar with the model view controller. But, you know, there's some people will change that. They'll use open source software and add to it. But I think there are a group of people that accept the defaults. And I think that the Safe Stack is great because it's none of the defaults, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like it's all the parts, well, all the parts other than Azure, which is A in our Safe acronym, is like open source technology built by an F-sharp community. Mm-hmm. So maybe I will go like letter by letter and say what are the technologies we use.
Let's do it.
So S is Swaf. It's F-sharp web library, backend web library, and implementation of web server, which is basically whatever everything you need to put on the backend. Then A is Azure for the hosting, because like we live in the .NET world, and Azure is great fit for the hosting .NET applications. Then we have F. F is an Fable. Fable is F-sharp to JavaScript compiler, and I know that you had episode with Alfonso a couple of weeks ago, who created Fable. So that's great technology that enables us to write F-sharp code and run this F-sharp code in the browser. And then E is Elmish. Elmish is Fable F-sharp implementation of so-called Elm architecture. And that's like just not going too deep into details, but that's just UI library we use and we recommend for everyone, because like we think that it's good UI way to build UIs in the browser.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's dig into these a little bit at a time. So Swav is a lightweight, non-blocking web server. Isn't Kestrel a web server too?
Yes, indeed. Kestrel is also lightweight, non-blocking web server, which is really good. The difference is that Swaf was created before there was even idea for the Kestrel, or maybe not. But it's like,
yeah, I don't know that. I don't know the dates.
It's like older technology than the .NET Core and the Kestrel. So it's been around for a couple of years right now.
Okay.
So that's why we use that. But also, F-sharp community created another great project called Giraffe, which is implementation of same programming model as in Swaf, just on top of Kestrel and ASP.NET Core. So you can take your basically similar helper functions and similar building blocks that you use in Swaf and put them on top of the ASP.NET core if you prefer doing.
Okay. Now, Swaf, does Swaf use libuv underneath it, or what is the socket library?
Yeah, I believe that for the Linux, it uses libuv.
Okay. So, Giraffe is, again, functional web framework for F-sharp developer built on top of Kestrel. Could I have the safe stack or the, I don't know, what it would be, G-A-F-E, GAF stack? Could I swap them out, or is it not quite as easy as swapping?
Yet you totally could swap the, those things out. Actually, you can swap probably every part of safe stack if you want, just like with LAMP stack. People were swapping like P, meant like either PHP or Python or Perl, whatever people wanted to use. With SafeStack, you can do for the first letter, you can do Swaf or Giraffe. For the A, you can do Azure, or maybe you want to do hosting on AWS. And then for the front-end things, we recommend using Fable as an F-sharp way, but as well, you can use something else if you prefer to write normal JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is going on in the community that's so exciting that that gives us so many choices? Like, I think it's great now. Like, we went from having only IIS to choose from, and now we've got all these different things. Like, it doesn't have to be just Kestrel or just Swaf or just Giraffe. Like, it's so cool that we have choices now. And I want like the corporate developer to know that it's good to have choices. Like there has, doesn't have to be a winner.
I think that, well, there are two sides of this question. First of all, the, if we talk just about F-sharp community, was always focused a bit more on the open source side of things and like, F-sharp compiler was open source before the C-sharp compiler was open source. There was F-Sharp Software Foundation was created before the .NET Software Foundation. So F-Sharp always was this pushing forward boundary of open source in .NET ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And answering on the other part about general .NET ecosystem and some more choices in that, I think that with this whole change of Microsoft being more friendly to open source in general, it just encourages people to build cool stuff on .NET. And if people build cool stuff on .NET, other people are starting to use it. And we have this nice, thriving ecosystem.
Why do you think that the F-sharp community was so open source like from the beginning? Because it was like in the early 2010s, it's been years and years and years. The F-sharp community has been pushing open source, right? 2005 was when F-sharp came out.
Yes. And even back then in 2005, when F-sharp came out, the F-sharp compiler was released together with its source code. So that was like in 2005, you could download the source code of F-sharp compiler and compile that. And that was like something that no other Microsoft product did back then. I think that lot of this push towards open source was caused, first of all, thanks to Don Syme, who was designer of the language and who really understood how much importance community can have. And because he had also some different backgrounds than only .NET, he has seen how it works out in other ecosystems. Other thing is the lot of people were really excited about F-sharp, but Microsoft support for F-sharp was not always so good as for C-sharp or Visual Basic, and people were kind of forced into building their own tools, their own ecosystem, and that's why that's how it started. And And I joined the F-sharp community a bit later than that, and that was like doing open source was just default behavior when I started doing F-sharp. So people I knew from the internet and people who I've seen on the conferences and I've met them personally, they were just doing open source. So when I've joined the community, it was like natural move. Oh, I guess that's how F-sharp people rolls, and that's what we do.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that there's a couple things there to parse. First, that Don Syme was out of Microsoft Research. So kind of F-sharp kind of like snuck out of research because it's like, hey, look at this cool research thing that we're doing, while the product people at Microsoft were off trying to focus on products, while Don was just making something, you know, that was cool and amazing. And like you said, open source by default. And while .NET Core is open source by default now, you've got a 10-year jumpstart with F#, right? That everything's been open by default as a community for a decade or longer.
Yes, indeed. And I really believe that's like one of the huge parts of F# success in comparison to some other languages that we have. On the one hand, we have this strong industrial ready ecosystem of .NET and in general Microsoft stack. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, we have many great people doing their own things, open source things, and community supporting these open source things. And I think that's really great and helpful for just creating a rich ecosystem where people can choose whatever fits they need.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a really good point. I would say, and maybe you would agree, F# really was about choice from the beginning because, you know, in 2005, you didn't have to use Visual Studio. Use Emacs if it makes you happy, right? Like they had support for editors years and years before other, before C# and OmniSharp happened. You've got support for Vim and Emacs and Sublime and, you know, Ionide for Atom and Visual Studio Code. Like any editor anywhere at all, you can do this. And also, didn't F# start supporting Mono very early?
Yes, I think that like back just couple of years after first release of F#, there was huge effort also from community to port F# to Mono, and like Dave Thomas, who is like F# MVP and worked for Xamarin Studio for Xamarin for a while, mm-hmm. did great job of porting F# to the Mono and also to the iOS and all these different devices that Xamarin supports.
Let's pivot a little bit and explain to me the relationship between Suave and Elmish. Like, what is the responsibility of each of those two pieces?
So essentially, Suave is our backend. Usually, we suggest people to write just some kind of APIs, like REST APIs with it. And then Fable and Elmish are the part that's responsible for doing the UI in the browser. So they are responsible for creating single page applications that looks nice and have like all the forms and all the stuff. So basically Suave is a backend, and then Fable and Elmish is a front end of our stack.
I see. Would you say Suave something that has views like MVC, or is Suave primarily about web APIs?
Suave can do views like MVC, but from what I've noticed in both like my open source journey and like my commercial projects, people usually use Suave as just API, as a way to just host an API endpoints. So just serve some data in JSON or XML and then build client-side views, client-side applications on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then Elmish is the pattern, it's the abstractions that you need to do your not model view controller, but model view update style, the way that the Elm people do it.
Yes, indeed. I guess the whole pattern was known for a while, and like as you've said, it's model view update. But everyone calls it Elmish because probably the Elm was one of the first really successful implementations of this pattern. I know that nowadays, if you do modern JavaScript with React.js and Redux.js, mm-hmm. you basically implement the same model view update pattern, just in a bit more complex way. But also, if you do some maybe desktop applications using reactive extensions, the resulted code can look really similar to the model view update pattern. So maybe going a bit more into this model view update, mm-hmm. the pattern is super simple. Model is just a simple plain type that class that represents the state of your application. Then view is a function that takes existing model, that takes some message, something that happens in your application, and produces new model representing new state of your application. And that was update. And the view is basically also simple function that takes model, current state of your application, and prints out some HTML or whatever rendering you use. In case of Elmish, in Fable, we use usually React as a rendering engine, so we build also on the industry-ready and battle-tested solution from Facebook.
Hey friends, a quick word from our sponsor. Progress Telerik wants to send someone to the Build Conference, so they're having a contest. Step one is to sign up to learn about the new, innovative, modern UI tools that they'll be announcing at Build. And by registering, you'll be entered to win a full conference pass to Microsoft Build plus a $500 travel stipend. They're also giving away 3 Telerik DevCraft UI licenses. All you have to do is register at buildcontest.pwop, that's P-W-O-P, .me. That's buildcontest.pwop.me. Progress offers the leading platform for developing and deploying mission-critical business applications, and they are the creator of the award-winning Telerik.net and Kendo UI JavaScript user interface controls. They have reporting solutions and productivity tools and all the tools that developers need to build high-performance modern apps with outstanding UI. Go now to buildcontest.pwop.me, that's P-W-O-P.me, and sign up to win. Okay, so let me see if I understand this. Because web applications that interact with humans go through state, they go through multiple states, like you're in the login state or you're in the creating object state, you know, that state is a part of humans' life. But in F#, you know, you're not just assigning variables and changing state. You have to create these immutable things, right? So you're moving through these different states. You're finding a balance between the state of the UI and state as it is represented in F#. And model view update means that the model keeps changing and new instances of the model kind of march forward. Is that correct?
Yes. That's basically the really good description of the pattern. What's really nice about the Elmish implementation in Fable, and what's really nice also about original Elm implementation, mm-hmm. Is that both those implementations basically hide the fact that you have some mutable state under the hood because, well, as you've said, the applications are mutable. The browser per se, like DOM model, is mutable. Right. So web applications are just mutable applications, and we kind of cannot work around that. But we can hide this mutable state under the some framework that we built, and Elmish is this framework that we use, that from point of view of F# developer, both view and update functions are just pure functions that mm-hmm. just takes one data and outputs some other data, don't perform really side effects, and so don't do some magical stuff and don't mutate some global variables or anything like that. And the whole re-rendering views and changing your real state of application that saved someone is handled by both Elmish and React.js.
I see. Okay. So if you want to hurt yourself, you could potentially hurt yourself by writing your own JavaScript. But can you write a safe application and an Elmish application only with F#, never writing any custom JavaScript of your own?
Yes. Yes. Basically, from point of view of normal user that just do a simple single page application, you just create new application from .NET new template, mm-hmm. and then you write plain F# functions, and that's all. That's all you need.
Wow. When I hear I'm not an F# developer, I'm just learning. But when I hear about things that compile to JavaScript, and I think I'm also speaking for the listener, I think do I want to bet my company on a thing that compiles a JavaScript? Because I think we have an image in our mind that it's going to compile to weird JavaScript, you know, like unreadable JavaScript.
First of all, you probably are using TypeScript or something like that, so you are already using some compilation to JavaScript. Even if you write JavaScript, you really often do some JavaScript to JavaScript compilation with Babel. And Babel is a tool that enables you to write new modern-ish JavaScript and compile it to plain old boring JavaScript that's supported by all our browsers. That's second thing. And the third thing, Fable actually uses Babel under the hood. I think that Alfonso talked a bit about that on the other podcast, but basically what Fable does is it doesn't manually outputs JavaScript code as a text, but instead it takes F-sharp abstract syntax tree, transforms this F-sharp abstract syntax tree into the abstract syntax tree that Babel understands, and feeds it to Babel. And then Babel is responsible for outputting JavaScript. And Babel is really popular tool in JavaScript ecosystem, so it's really battle-tested and really powerful. And one of the things they focus on as a Babel project and Babel community is outputting nice, readable JavaScript code that can be easily debugged inside the browser and with all tools that JavaScript ecosystem has. So in case of this stack, I don't think that's really a problem, just like it's not a problem in case of TypeScript.
That is a very, very good explanation. And that's really great. People should check out that show. And they should also check out Fable, FABLE.io. What's nice is that you can go up there and compile in the browser. So I've got F sharp on the left here, and I can hit Alt Enter. It will show me the code on the right. And if you line it up, like, it's really close. Like, you can see it. It's not like it's compiling into unreadable assembly language, you know? It's really quite amazing. You get to write the language that makes you happy and then create the language that runs in the browser. It's pretty extraordinary.
Yes, and it's really important. Advantage of Fable in general in comparison to some other choices in compile to JavaScript ecosystem, because it enables us to do really deep integration with existing JavaScript tooling, because we output JavaScript that's understood by normal JavaScript tools like Webpack and stuff like that.
Oh, that's a very good point. So let me ask you this then. Let's talk about integration. If I'm a company that has some existing intellectual property in JavaScript, and maybe I have some existing .NET DLLs that are in, you know, C# or VB, and I'm looking at the safe stack, I can combine my F# libraries with my C# libraries and my Fable with existing JavaScript that I have.
Yes, indeed. Combining F# and C# is pretty straightforward. It's just normal DLL reference or normal project reference, normal NuGet package, depending on how you do it in your company. For the integration between Fable, so F# running in the browser, and JavaScript, because modern JavaScript has this functionality of modules, all NPM packages and stuff are following one convention, how to do things and how to pack things. You can say something like, I want to import just one function from this file, and say it like in F# file, say, I require function called do something from file abc.js, and Webpack will put it together, and you will just use your JavaScript in this from F#, because under the hood, it's actually just compiled to normal JavaScript require statement, and normal JavaScript require statement are compiled by Webpack and bundled together, and all magic is done. So yes, you can easily just use both C# from F# on the backend and JavaScript from F# on the front end, which is really nice. In one of the demos, we have somewhere we are building application using both TypeScript and F# in one file. Mm-hmm. And all the tooling is working together. So the watch mode we have, so this automatic recompilation, we do change in the TypeScript file. We save TypeScript file. Everything is recompiled then and automatically refreshed in the browser. Mm-hmm. We do change in F# file and the same happens. And you can edit both TypeScript, JavaScript, and F# fable code at the same time and have this nice developer experience.
Yeah. I do want to point out also, if you looked at the SafeStack homepage, about halfway down, it says retrofit your existing stack. It's got some really good examples that I was impressed with where it says, oh, already using Web API? That's cool. Use these parts of the SafeStack. Or if you want to write your own SQL, that's cool. You don't have to, you don't have to pick the whole stack. You pick the piece that you already, you want to, and then you plug it into the code you already have, which is pretty sweet.
Yes, and again, I think that's something really important for us because not every project is greenfield project. Not every company is willing to bet on 4 different technologies that they don't know. Maybe they want to risk on just front-end or something. So it's not like that we try to sell Safe as a do Safe, don't do anything else and just use the technologies we suggest. Mm-hmm. We really believe into this integration with existing ecosystems.
Yeah. And people can set this up on their machines really easily without, like, it won't hurt your machine. Like, I went and hooked up the .NET CLI safe template. So now I can say .NET new safe. And it just kind of, it's just another template that sits alongside the other thing. So I can be playing with the Safe stack while I'm doing my C# in my regular job. So Safe can kind of sneak into my life and until maybe I'm using it completely.
Yes, obviously for the front-end part, you need also to have some other dependencies like Node, right, and NPM or Yarn. But I think nowadays that's not really like dangerous dependency and a lot of people have it installed on their machines. So
right, you need Node and Yarn for the JavaScript and the ultimately the Babel underneath.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. One other thing that I think is worth pointing out that I was really surprised about is the demo that you've got of the Safe stack as it applies to React Native. So now you're using F# to write a mobile application.
Yes, that's really great. And that works just fine. It's using React Native, as you've said. So we, again, has this battle-tested technology from Facebook. Mm-hmm. And we like just simply compile to the React Native, and then React Native tooling does its magic to compile for the Android and iOS devices. Mm-hmm. So this is really great. What's also really important when we talk about these different compilation targets is that you can share your domain of your code between all those targets. So I know companies that have basically same code, same domain, mm-hmm, running in the browser, on the mobile applications, on the backend, and also on the Azure Functions, for example. So this enables people to be highly productive because really often when you do those different applications, different client applications, you need to repeat some code because the browser is written in JavaScript and the desktop application is written in C# in XAML. And with Fable and with SafeStack in general, you can easily share your code across the domain, across the different clients and different parts of the stack.
Mm-hmm. The most impressive thing that of all of this that I think is how clean the hot module replacement is. I know that you use Webpack for that, but I think it's worth giving the people who are listening a task. You should go and check out the Safe Bookstore. Maybe you can explain how this works because I'm looking at this animation where, you know, someone has localhost 8080 up and they make a change to some F# code. Not a CSHTML, not some HTML, and they hit refresh, but they literally change F#, hit save, and the web page changes but doesn't lose state. How is that possible?
That's basically some Webpack magic. But because the client code using Elmish is really structured and works with these messages that just change state, it's really easy to... Basically, the current state of your application is just set of messages that mutates the state. So it's really easy for Webpack to just, oh, this is this list of the messages that happened, these actions that modify the state. We shouldn't touch that. And then, oh, we can refresh the rest of the code. So that's really nice. It's actually, from what I've heard, I'm not super experienced like React and Redux developer, but from what I've heard, this hot module replacement is actually working better in Elmish than it works originally in React Redux. Even Facebook on their web page has this information that, oh, we have this hot module replacement, but it usually causes some problems and it may not be super perfect. In case of Elmish applications, it just works and it's like amazing. And it gives really, really nice and totally different experience of editing your applications because you don't need to repeat all actions to bring you to old state.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It took me a moment to figure out what was going on, but you're actually running two different web servers at the same time, right? You're running the .NET watch on your application for things like your unit test, which then launches your server. But then you've got a Webpack dev server that Fable supports on another port. And these things happen automatically. So you're running two things at the same time, one to run your app and one to support your development.
Yes, indeed. Of course, it requires some configuration, but most of the configuration is done automatically when you create the application with .NET New save template. So basically, when you create .NET New save, you should have all these things ready to work and just press F5 in Visual Studio Code, and it will start everything and will just work.
Yeah, once I had Yarn and Node installed, Yarn is an NPM package manager. I installed Node, I installed Yarn, I put on .NET SDK, I ended up using Packet, and it just worked. And of course, I could even use Docker for my deployment at the end. I think it took me 15 minutes to get that working, and it was really amazing.
Yeah, so I'm just happy to hear that you had really good experience with that. And I really think that there are actually still some places in the whole, especially on the Fable side, where the developer experience can be made better. And that's like huge effort right now. Right now is made to make some things a bit better. Because as we are talking here, you need to have some knowledge about this weird JavaScript things I'm talking about. So you need to understand that, oh, you are using React for the rendering engine and it has some features and some stuff happens because of that. And then you have to use this Webpack thing for this hot module replacement. And while it is configured, when it stops working, you probably as a normal .NET developer or someone who haven't played with the front-end stack so far, you don't know what's going on. So we kind of are especially Alfonso is working on making all this stuff a bit nicer.
Well, there is some magic, but the nice thing about it is that it's magic open source all the way down. So as long as you understand the stack, you'll have a good experience.
Yes, indeed.
Fantastic.
Also, one more thing, probably another important thing I want to mention is that the save stack it's not only like those couple of libraries put together, but we actually provide a couple of companies provide commercial support for this stack. So if any company is interested in having some commercial support, because I totally understand that not everyone wants to just buy into this open source stack, not having any guarantees and not having any help other than asking questions on GitHub. So if any company and anyone has this need to have formal commercial support for such applications, there are a couple of companies that provides that. And I think that's also really important from just F# community point of view, because F# community for a lot of time had this there was this opinion about F# community that it's just a bunch of those crazy open source hipsters, and they just do stuff for fun, and no one is using this commercially, and SafeStack is also showing that there are some companies that work on that and provide support with F# and this stack in particular.
That is a very good point. And if you go to safe-stack.github.io, you can see that there's not only a rich community, but there's companies like Lambda Factory and Computational IT and others. So just like when you use open source like Node, you call Node Source with the Safe Stack, there is a community of people putting this stuff into production who can help you commercially and make you successful. I really appreciate you chatting with me today.
Thanks. It was a great experience for me, and
I'm glad.
Happy to share some F# stuff.
Fantastic. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.